College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Negandhi.
Welcome to the College Football Podcast. Kevin Negandhi with David Pollock, and hope everyone that's listening is safe and healthy as the summer's just begun before they take their vacations. Or if you're on vacation listening to us, we hope that you're relaxing. And we're looking forward to having Penn State head coach James Franklin join us to talk about how his team's handling voluntary workouts and how this pandemic has affected him and his family personally, as well as the team's outlook this upcoming season. This is a team that's going to be probably preseason top five. I'd be surprised if they're outside the top seven when you look at who they have returning on offense and defense. Before we get to James, though, how's vacation treating you, Pollock?
I'm about to say, some people are on vacation. They still have to hear from your sorry butt. So, I mean, it's even worse for me. But no, vacation is grand. I needed a reprieve. I don't know about you, Kevin, but a lot of time at the house. Uh-huh. And I looked at my wife at one point. I'm like, baby doll, like, I need to see a different house. Like, I need to see something different. Like, I don't care if it's trees. I don't care what it is. I need to go look at something else. So I think it's been nice to get to the beach for a couple of days and stay a couple of days more. And so it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm wrapping up vacation tonight. We're taping this Sunday night. I'm wrapping up vacation just now after being off for the last 10 days from SportsCenter, as well as just anything ESPN related. And Taylor, our fine producer, and I were talking before we started this, and he asked me if I got away because we were planning on getting away, and we did not go away. We were supposed to go to Newport a couple days ago, and like this morning I woke up and I was just like looking at my wife, and I was like, this is Groundhog Day. Like, we're back. We love our house, but it just feels like it's Groundhog Day every single day. If you have kids especially, it's like, okay, what are we going to do today? How about we ride bikes? And we're not complaining, because everybody's safe and healthy. It's just over and over again the same stuff. We're just missing Sonny and Cher waking us up every morning.
I feel you, man. We've adopted a bunch of new hobbies, and we've scared the piss out of our neighbors on the regular now, because my kids and their friends have. So how about this, Kev? My kids, they're addicted to airsoft now, and they have like the guns that, first of all, they look really real. And they have the masks that they're wearing, you know, all over the place. And, you know, they're running through our whole yard. We live off of a road where you drive by and you can see everything that's going on. But they've started to take pallets and put them in the woods and build bases. And they've used the they've used the hammers and the nails. And I got my buddies coming over. They're builders, dropping off, you know, 15 pallets at a time. And they just take them in the woods and go start building stuff. So we've adopted some airsoft life, but yeah, we definitely look at each other occasionally and just like, all right, babe, let's get rolling. Like, I feel like we just did this, but you know what? It's all good. So.
Yeah. You know, the one good thing about this pandemic for us, if there's anything good, trust me, I'm aware of what my words are right now, considering what we're going through as a country, is that the time that I've had with the kids where I could teach the boys to ride a bike, and now every night they're, dad, let's go out riding bikes. And that to me is awesome. Like amazing. I wouldn't have been able to do that where consistently every day, let's keep on practicing. And you know, today was a big deal. Let's go down these hills. And it's like, yeah, let's go. You're good to go. Let's go down the hills. You know?
Well, Kevin, how many times have you said in life, how many times have you looked at your wife and gone, man, I wish life would slow down a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like, God slowed us down. Like we're all slowed down. Like the world has come to a standstill for in our lifetime more so than any. And so it's been a blessing. And I think for a lot of people, it's not just me, but I've just heard so many people that talk about eating dinner as a family. Yep. And so many people playing board games and just spending an inordinate amount of time. I've loved not having baseball and softball, because we'd be at my son's or my daughter's tournament every weekend. And we're coaching, and it's just there's a lot, and there's practice that goes into it. Now, you know, we don't have to worry about that stuff, and it's been awesome. Now, listen, I'm not saying I miss sports. I love sports, but I would have told you this. I would have said that we are a sports family through and through, and we're not blinking from that. We can't live without sports. We definitely can live without sports, and yeah, we've shown ourselves that. Like, our family's way more important than sports, and even if we don't have sports, we're still having a dang good time together and enjoying life, and going along just fine. So it's definitely showed our family that.
Yeah, it's definitely a good reset. But here's the thing. You know, we also are in this business, and you got into the position that you got into is because of sports. Same here, because my passion for sports. And now we may experience a screeching halt here this fall because the numbers, the reality is they're not going down in many states. When you look at the testing, and in fact, Texas, Florida, California, Ohio, Michigan, Arizona, they've been hit hard. Yeah, Texas Tech on Friday reporting 23 positive COVID-19 test results among football athletes and the staff.
Hey, Kevin, yeah. let me ask you a question.
Uh-huh.
Did we not expect the numbers to skyrocket? Like, am I in the minority of going, we're going to bring 70, 80 people back together who have been in different locations all over the place that are now going to come back together? By the way, testing readily available, testing often. Like, who didn't think that this was going to happen?
You're 100% right. I'm
very confused by people that look like, oh my God, can you believe this? Yeah, I can believe it. And
yeah, I'm with you on that. But I will tell you this, that I think that we were all expecting tests to come up positive at every program just because more than 2 million people in this country have tested positive for COVID-19. The stunning thing, I think, though, is how new cases seem to slow down in late spring, right? And then we've seen in mid-June now this trend upward nationally. And I think that's the scary part. I think that when you enter this point where, we were in the spring and we're saying, okay, hopefully that it'll go down and we could get in front of this. And now the concern is that, oh, goodness, like everywhere you go, the numbers are high. And now I'm concerned. I have general concern about whether we're going to have a season, whether it's going to start on time, whether we're going to finish on time. Before, at one point, I was like, okay, I think that by September we will be in a position that we can do it. But here's the thing that separates college football from all of the other sports we're talking about. You are on campus, and many of these campuses feature 15 to 20 to 30 to 40,000 students, and it is impossible 18 to 22 to make sure you're containing this virus if it spreads.
Well, especially when there's not a real threat to those kids. And as well as I do, man, when you get to be our age, we start to think about more people than ourselves. When you're 18, 19, 20, 21, you think about yourself 99% of the time. I mean, it's just a fact. I did. And I think these kids do. But what's interesting to me is we're getting all these cases, and we're kind of getting them all out of the way. What's the first team? Is it Clemson now that is self-contaminating, that's basically saying, let's just get everybody this thing? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, to an extent, I'm not being serious. I'm not insinuating they're in a room, sticking swabs up each other's nose and passing it around. I'm saying, like, but, there's a point now where this stuff happens now. It's okay because it doesn't affect later on down the road. Down the road, you're obviously not affected when it could really matter and the chips could all be on the line and you could be playing for something that's, bigger than yourself. So I expected a big time spike when they started testing, because again, you said 2 million is the number, Kevin.
Yeah.
I think you could take that number times 6, 7, or 8 of people that have actually had it and not been tested.
Yeah, 100%, because we didn't have enough tests. Yeah.
100. I'm pretty positive that it ran through the Pollock household in December. Long time ago, before, when you talk about symptoms and all that stuff, and my wife was out of commission, had a cough for like 5 or 6 weeks and didn't feel great. And, she's obviously younger too, at 34, then, she's not necessarily feeling it as bad as other people would or have the effects that other people would. But I just think that it had to happen. It was going to happen. Now, if you're having a bunch of this stuff happen now, Kevin, you don't have it happen, in November, in December, in January, when you're trying to finish a football season.
Fair point. And you mentioned Clemson. They announced Friday 14 football players testing positive over the past week. The total number of cases on the team in the last month is 37. That's roughly one third of the roster. I think, when we're talking to 18 to 22 year olds, also the biggest concern for me is not only their health, but also when they go home. Like, right, if they're going home and they have family around, and protecting them. I use that personal point where I want to see my mom. My mom's 73 and has, some breathing issues, and she doesn't have 100% lung capacity, and she lives in the Philadelphia suburbs, and I want to go see her, but I can't because I don't want to be in a position where you know, I want to go hug her. How about that? I can go see her, but I'd have to obviously be, you know, outside and wave because I just want to make sure she's okay. And she is. I want to say that she is. But I think many of these students, 18 to 22 years old, if they want to go home and see family, they don't want to be isolated, right? If they want to see, you know, their cousin or their brothers or sisters or their parents or their, you know, aunts and uncles, they've got to be aware of that, right? And we're going to talk to James Franklin specifically about that, how that's affecting his daughter specifically, and how they've had to quarantine because she's dealing with sickle cell disease. Yep. And that is a serious thing when you talk about compromising the immune system. I think big picture, I hear what you're saying, that it shouldn't surprise anybody with these positive tests. The concern I have is that where are we going to be in a month, the 2 months, are we, you know, they were hoping by the end of June, early July, that maybe they could say, all right, we're going to have a season. Now they can't do that, right? They've got to keep on waiting. I think college, you know, commissioners, conference commissioners and presidents, they all have to talk.
Well, and I think why would you say anything definitive right now when you've got Major League Baseball on the horizon and NBA on the horizon, who's are going to do a lot of learning for you. They're going to do a lot of case studies for you. They're going to go through a lot of these problems that you're going to be going through in the future that they can probably teach you and learn. And you can learn a lot of stuff off of what they're going through. But no, I hear what you're saying, and I completely understand that to think beyond and to think bigger than just yourself. And you know, that's where some of the folks that do have health concerns and they're on the team and you know, they've got to be careful and others don't. And then when's the backlash of that going to come out? Because it's just going to be crazy, man, because it's not just the pandemic. When you have the social injustice stuff and now players having having so much more control, like we've already seen so many things that are crazy, but we got so much more to come. Like this,
yes, we do.
This is going to be like, here's another thing. You think about this season. If you opened up the Georgia football stadium this weekend and you told the fans there was going to be a game. There are thousands of people. There are 20,000, 40,000 people that would sign up and go right now. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you signed a waiver. I don't know how you made it happen, but they would 1,000% go. And the ones that are not compromised and the ones that are younger, obviously, aren't going to be as much at risk. They would fill that stadium because there's risk in everything we do. And there's risk in driving in a car to work, you know, and you know, when you get in that car, by the way, Kevin, we have a speed limit for a reason, you know, like you have to go the speed limit. And guess what we choose to do? We choose to speed. I choose to speed. I can speak for myself. I ain't never been around nobody that doesn't speed, by the way. We choose to speed. And when we speed, Kevin, what happens? Are you more likely to get hurt in an accident? Are you more inclined to be hurt severely or seriously when you go 70 or 80 on a highway as opposed to dialing it back to 30, you know, yes, we are. So I think you're going to give people choices to
David, I will counter by saying too, while you're choosing the speed, you're also required to wear the safety belt. And whenever I get in a conversation with somebody, and listen, everybody can do what they want, but my counter to people saying, well, I want to choose to do what I want to do. I'm like, great. Yeah. But right now, choosing to wear a mask is kind of, I interpret it as a safety belt, right? Like it may not save you, but it will prevent things. Like a safety belt may not save you, but it's going to prevent the extreme damage, right? And I just hope it's practiced, you know?
And you know what else? If you go hundreds of years and you go back to the Black Plague and you research and you read some of the stuff that happened hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years ago, do you know how they fought that? Do you know how they fought all these things we've had in history, all these big events with, you know, big time breakouts? It was absolutely 1,000% the same thing. They wore enormous masks. They weren't like the masks we wear. They're nice little cloth masks. They wore enormous masks and they social distanced. They stayed away from people. Like, it is very, like, we can go back hundreds and hundreds of years to learn those points and to learn from history. And those are two things that you still can do to this day that can make a difference. And I think you've seen people come out now and Mark Cuban or whoever it is come out and make sure that they tell you, like, listen, be smart, wear a mask, and to try to stop the spread and try to not impact other lives.
Well said. The head coach of Penn State football, James Franklin, joining us here on the podcast. Coach, first off, We live in times that are hard to describe. How are you? How is your family right now?
I appreciate it. Yeah, we're doing pretty good. The family is safe, and you know, I don't know if you heard, but you know, my youngest daughter, Addison, she's 12 years old. She's got sickle cell disease, which, if you don't know a whole lot about sickle cell disease, it is a African American blood disease, autoimmune. So we have to be very careful. So, you know, just like you guys, you know, worry about your children, it's the same with ours. But if our daughter gets sick, she's usually in the hospital for 48 to 72 hours. If she has a fever, she spends probably 4 or 5 trips, you know, in the hospital per year. So we just got to be careful. And because of that, you know, my wife and kids are going to stay separate from me for the season, just because, you know, don't feel like I can go to work and come home and interact with them, you know, daily with her autoimmune disease. We just didn't think it was the right thing to do. And we're fortunate to have a second residence. So they're just going to stay there and not leave the property for the next 5-6 months at homeschool. So, you know, it's a little unique from that perspective, but we also understand that we're blessed to be fortunate enough to make that decision.
And she's 12 years old. How is she handling this?
Well, you know, it's obviously, you know, it's layered, you know, so it's not school. They're going to be homeschooled this year because, you know, we couldn't allow our one daughter to go to school and then come home and interact with our youngest, Addison. It's being away from, you know, your dad, which, you know, I grew up in a single parent home with just a mom, so I know how important, you know, that is. And I've worked really hard at, you know, being a great father based on how, you know, my upbringing was. So, you know, obviously having a conversation with your wife and your children that you're leaving and probably not going to see him for 6 months, you know, that was a tough conversation. And I think it's magnified for us too, because, you know, at Penn State, you know, my wife and kids come to the office almost every day. They come to practice couple times a week. They're in the nutrition bar making smoothies for the guys. They're in the training room when the guys are hurt, giving them hugs and checking on them and asking them how they are. They're running down the hallway saying hi to all their uncles, all the football coaches, and a lot of the other, you know, children of our coaches are as well. So that was another reason why my wife just felt like it'd be best for them to stay there, because for them to be here and not come to games, be here and not come to the office, you know, throughout the week, we just thought that was going to be even harder to do. So, you know, challenging, but sacrifices that we felt like we had to make, you know, for our daughter.
So, Coach, we've got so many things going on in our world, and that you just talked about stuff that's going on in your world. And we're having conversations with our kids that are, you know, huge, important conversations. You're having huge, important conversations with your daughter and making decisions on your family. And then you got all these kids that you represent that are making huge decisions and that aren't able to stand on the podcast with us right now and always articulate, because they don't have the experience you have, Coach, and we have, to always speaking and feeling comfortable with that. So the whole world and everything that's going on, like, what are you talking about to your players, and how do you keep your, not just your family, now you're talking about all your players, who's your family too. How are you keeping them engaged in the world, but trying to protect them and trying to have real conversations and moving forward?
Well, you know, I will tell you this, it's been challenging. You know, I hate to use the word exhausted, but I will tell you personally and professionally, this has been a challenging off season, because not only, you know, do I have that issue with my family, but, you know, I'm African American. My wife is half Nigerian. So I got two African American daughters, and we have those conversations that we have to have as well. I have those conversations with my team and what's going on, you know, in our country. And, you know, it's been tough. It really has. And I'm really proud of our team. We've been on this from the beginning. You know, I think we've had 5 meetings as a team, voluntary meetings. And what I love about it is they've been voluntary, but we've had over 100 people on each one of the calls. And the first couple, you know, I'll be honest with you, it was mainly just the people of color. you know, speaking up on those calls. That was coaches and staff members as well as players. But one of the best things that happened is my director of football operations, Michael Hazel, you know, he sent me a text message after the first one and basically said, you know, Coach, you know, tonight's conversation was great, but the reality is for us to make the changes that we need to make, not only, you know, in our society, but on campus and in our world, you know, some guys like myself and others, some of the non, you know, coaches of color, some of the non-players of color, have to be willing to speak up and be vulnerable and have some uncomfortable conversations. And I thought it was such a powerful message that he sent me. I had him share it with the staff, and then I had him share it with the team on the next call that we had. And it really allowed everybody to open up and made people comfortable to talk. And we've had some powerful conversations. I told the guys after one call one night, we were on there about 2 hours. And I said, you know what? I'm more proud tonight than the night we won the Big Ten championship, because the conversations that we're having, and you guys know, I mean, you know, the experiences that athletes have in a locker room or in a huddle are so different than what most people experience. And, you know, I'd make the argument, I've always been a believer in what college athletics and what high school athletics can do to complement the overall educational experience. But I believe more than ever that's important, because these things, they don't exist in locker rooms, because you get to know people and you get to know their backgrounds and where they're from. And I think football is a great example, because you have so many people from so many different backgrounds, you know, that it forces you to get to know each other. So, you know, I wish everybody could experience college football, you know, locker room or huddle.
You're one of 13 black head coaches among the 130 FBS programs. You're part of the Big Ten's new anti-hate, anti-racism coalition. And, you know, one of the things that I've just looked into and I just sit here and wonder is we're a society that, you know, we feast on something and then the next day it's on to the next thing, right? Because everybody has a short memory. How do you, I mean, I want to know, how do you maintain the momentum, you know, that we're seeing right now when we talk about, you know, equality and addressing, you know, racial injustice? How do you maintain that momentum into the fall to have kind of a lasting effect for equality past 2020? Do you understand? Because my biggest concern is the movement we are seeing in sports is so big right now. And I fear that come fall time, it's like, oh, let's go back to sports. And in reality, you cannot just go back to sports, because this is part of everybody. It is part of society. How do you maintain that momentum, Coach?
Oh, trust me. I understand. I've been living with it for 48 years.
Yeah.
I think your point is a great one. And we've talked about that on our calls as a team, you know, this is great to talk about now, and we have to come up. Not only do we have to have hard conversations, and we got to get one of the biggest problems we have, in my opinion, is because of the topic and the subject matter, you got really smart people for a long time that haven't had the conversations because it's uncomfortable. And that's what we got to get past. We got to get past that. We got to create an environment that people are willing to talk, and we got to get people that are willing to take some risks and have the conversation. And then as a team, what we talked about is, yeah, we got to come up with some short-term solutions and action plans, because talking is great, but there's got to be action plans as well. And then we got to be able to sustain that. So one of the things that we were able to get done that I'm really proud of our players is we were able to get done is I was able to get the president of the university as well as the president of our board. That's a lot of people don't understand. It's not just the president of the university. It's the president of the board. And they were able to come on our call as well as the athletic director. And we were able to have a conversation and let them know about the concerns and hear from them and talk about the complexity of the issues and the challenges. You know, I was a head coach in the SEC at a private school. Private schools are very different than public schools and what they can and can't do. And part of this is educating our players on that as well. So, that's a big part of our discussion. I do think, you know, some of the stuff when it comes to politics and the election coming up, I think that helps drive people to keep this discussion going. But I think, you know, I think we're at a point where people have had enough, and we've been dealing with these issues
on some level for a very, very long time. And I think people have had enough. And what I think is really, you know, exciting in some ways. I hate to use the word exciting in these times, but I actually believe in times like this is when the greatest opportunity for change happens. And when I see so many people on our streets and on social media that don't look like me and don't look like some of my players, but are just as passionate about this subject as people of color are, that's when we have a chance. We're always going to make a bigger impact when we're doing it together and creating allies, although we have to be willing to make people uncomfortable at times.
James, I appreciate your words there. And it is a conversation that it's not just a week, that's not just a month, that's not just, hey, the rest of 2020. That is a lasting conversation. And this is a conversation in homes, right? Between family members talking and breaking down the walls here. And that there's, you know, we're dealing with this in front of us head on. And also you're managing the idea that you're doing these voluntary workouts. And before that, you're also doing these conversations through Zoom. You know, when we look at programs around the country, and David and I talked briefly about this before we brought you on, that, you know, everybody was expecting positive tests, you know, because that's just where we are in the environment that we're in when it comes to COVID. But from Clemson to Texas Tech, reports are coming in with multiple players testing positive. How has Penn State handled player testing as well as when you guys with the protocol during voluntary workouts as they began recently?
Yeah, so one of the things that we started right from the beginning, which I thought was really helpful, is not only did we have player meetings about this, but I also had parent meetings, because we all kind of, you know, want our players to communicate with their parents. But as we know, that rarely happens to the level that it needs to happen. So by us having parent meetings, multiple parent meetings about this subject and tell them what we were thinking and the protocols that we were putting in place, I think it got us to a good place where our players and parents were comfortable with it. And I think part of it is, you can't sugarcoat it. Like, we were very transparent. We were very open. We were very honest. I think some of the programs that have struggled were not transparent about it. You know, I said, for us to sit here and think that we're going to be able to reduce all risk, we're not. You know, you're going to have to take on some of this risk of coming back. But you have to, you know, be comfortable with the policies and the procedures that we have in place. And we think it's the right thing to do. And I think the other thing was important is we made it very clear and obvious to everybody that this was not mandatory. This is voluntary. If you're not comfortable coming back, don't come back. And we have, you know, we have 38 players that haven't returned yet. And we have, I think, 6 scholarship players that have chose not to return as well. And that's fine. That's perfectly understandable. And again, I don't know if that's always been, you know, expressed in that way. And, you know, for us, I think that was very, very helpful part of this process for the parents and for the players. And then we just try to hammer them with education as much as we possibly can. And so far, so good with us. But the hard part is you can have all the policies and procedures you want when they're with you. But when they go out in the community or they go out on campus and the regular students or other people in the community are not following your policies and procedures, that's what makes it so challenging. It's just like what's going on with out-of-conference games. There's a lot of discussions about what people should do in conference and out-of-conference games because people will have less control out of conference games. But, you know, the reality is this is a difficult subject to tackle. You know, okay, you test. And there's a three-day wait period for most tests to come back. And there's a 72-hour incubation period from everything I have read and seen. Well, after we test our players on all these campuses, does that mean they're not going to class anymore? Does that mean they're not walking around the communities anymore? You know, so it's challenging. And I think the best thing you can do is do everything you possibly can to keep your guys safe. And then it's got to be a personal decision. You know, for the players, for the parents, and even for my staff. You know, we have told our staff, if you're not comfortable coming back, any of us, please state so, and we'll adjust accordingly. And I just think that's what we all have to do. We got to have really good conversations about this, and we got to be transparent, and we got to be honest. And then we got to make decisions. And everybody has their own individual choice that they can make based on their circumstances.
Coach, this is proof that we live in crazy times when we've talked to you for 10 to 15 minutes and we don't even mention football yet. Like, we don't even broach the subject of football. It's crazy. But, and I'm not even going there yet either, Coach, because I want to talk about something. You know, I think about you, your coaching career, and you were the coach in waiting for Ralph Friedgen. And I got recruited, by the way, by Ralph Friedgen. So I know Ralph really, really well. And he's an old school coach. Well, old school coaches, in my opinion, Coach, this is where I'm going now. Old school coaches now, it's a new school world. And now you see the players taking a voice and going to social media and talking about their coaches very free. Dude, we had the fear of God in us. Even back in the day, like, I would never say anything against my coach. And that's not the world we live in now. Like, talk about that too. Like, the evolution of players and, like, how you treat them and now them being able to say things at Twitter. And not just at your program. I'm just saying old school coaches are in for a rude awakening in this new world we live in.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And I think that's in really every walk of life. It's in coaches. It's in probably in any organization or any industry, people have a voice and a platform. And I think you're exactly right. You know, we're seeing that more now than ever. And again, I think the important thing, though, is those are part of the discussions that have to happen. You have to be able to create an environment within your organization that players are going to come to you. You know, to me, I would hope that the players in our organization would come to me and discuss these things and allow me the opportunity to solve the problem. I hope they would go to our athletic director and give us the ability to solve the problem. I would hope they would go to their position coach and solve the problem. But if things aren't changing, then I do think they have the right and the opportunity to now go public and make a statement and make change. And you're right. That would have never happened. That would have never happened. Not only 15 years ago, 10 years ago, I don't think it would have happened 5 years ago. Things changed. And, you know, so it's, you know, I guess the way I look at it is like most things, you know, I've embraced it. And I think it's empowering. And I think it's awesome that these student athletes do have this voice, but we also have a responsibility as coaches and administrators to help them through that and show them the right way to go. No different than our conversation with our president of our university and our board, our chair of our board. You know, we had an opportunity to visit with them and talk about our concerns and give them an opportunity to respond. You know, so I think it's all part of responsibility, but it's also part of building that trust that the players feel like they can go to you and have these uncomfortable, tough conversations. And it may be about you. It may be about your staff. It may be about, you know, the community.
All right, Coach, one thing you don't have to worry about, and there's no indecision about this, and there's no concerns or worries. When you got Micah Parsons, life is good. When you got 11 on defense, because we were preparing for the draft, Coach, and you got Jan Johnson, who I loved inside, and Yetur Gross-Matos. But every time you turn the tape, you go, my God, 11's a freak. And you watch him fly to the football and all he can do. Like, I think he's defensive player of the year type guy next year. Obviously All-American. Talk about your team next year, starting with him and guys that we're going to need to know this replacing KJ Hamler and Yetur and some of those guys.
So you guys want to talk football?
Yes.
Yeah, we're excited. You know, obviously it's challenging because all these things are going on and there's concern about what football is going to be. And I think we got a chance to have, you know, one of our best teams that we've had. And, you know, we got so much experience coming back and we got so many playmakers coming back. We got a preseason All-American on offense and a preseason All-American on defense and multiple other players that I think should be part of that conversation as well. And, you know, I love all the stuff that these guys are getting preseason, you know, but at the end of the day, you know, as we all know, it's going to be about how you play on Saturdays and where you're at the end of the season. So there's a fine line between these situations and building confidence in our team and building confidence in the individuals. But at the end of the day, we got to go out and do it. And, you know, so far, so good with, you know, we talk about, you know, championship habits and we talk about behaviors. You know, all the talk is great, whether it's the media talking or whether it's us talking, but do our actions and behaviors align with what we're saying? And, you know, I couldn't be more proud of our guys. And you're right, having a guy like Micah Parsons, you know, he's an eraser. You know, whether the defense is run exactly the way it's supposed to or slightly off, he still has a chance to erase some of your issues and make you right. And we got experience on the D line. We got experience in the secondary. I think we're more athletic. I think we got more playmakers. One of the areas I think we can really improve on defense is with turnovers, which is an area we've needed to improve, you know, and offensively we got, you know, we got, maybe the best running back room in the country. We got experience on the offensive line. We got one of the best tight ends in college football. We got an experienced quarterback who won 11 games last year. We got to solve some issues at wide receiver in terms of, you know, experience returning and production, you know, returning, but we like those guys. And the thing that nobody ever wants to talk about is, you know, we love our specialists. You know, we got a group of specialists, kicker, punter, snapper, that we're excited about as well. So, you know, we got a lot of good things going for us, but we got to find a way to get W's and build confidence and get our chemistry and morale right.
And so, real quick background here, Coach. I grew up in a Penn State family. I'm from the Philadelphia suburbs. I've got 9 cousins that went to Penn State. My brother originally went to Penn State, and I was sending a couple of them texts as well as a bunch of other buddies. And immediately they're talking about every single star on the team. And the backfield's ridiculous. Journey Brown, Noah Kane, Devin Ford, you've got some talent as freshmen coming in. You bring in, you know, Kirk Shiraka's offense from Minnesota, where he did a great job finding a way to utilize running backs while controlling the football. But at the same time, considering the unique summer that we're having, what have you been able to do to install this offense during this time with Sean Clifford and that backfield? And then also, let's not forget, as you mentioned, that star, superstar tight end down the road, Pat Freiermuth. How are you guys getting all on the same page while you're installing a different offense?
Well, I think that's the narrative that's out there, and it doesn't matter how many times I say it. Everybody, you know, keeps saying the same thing over and over again. But you know, we couldn't be more excited about having Kirk. Me and Kirk know each other for a long time. He's from Pennsylvania originally. He's an experienced play caller. What he was able to do at Western Michigan and at Minnesota was extremely impressive. And we couldn't be more excited about having Kirk here with us. I think he's going to make a significant impact for us. But, you know, the reality is when we hired Kirk, you know, I needed to hire someone that understood, you know, that this isn't broke. You know, we've won 11 games 3 out of the last 4 years. You know, we finished, you know, in the top 10 and we're preseason number 5 in the country. So I needed to hire somebody that was willing to come in here, study what we were doing, what fits the system that could stay, and then what he did at Minnesota that was really well that fit the system, and we could merge the two systems. So hiring somebody that had enough humility that said, look, I'm not just going to come in and install my offense. I'm going to go in. We're going to sit in a room for hours and weeks and grind through this and have discussions to come up with the best system moving forward for Penn State. And that's why Kirk came, and that's why I hired him. And he's got so many years of experience and such a, such a flexible background that helped. But at the end of the day, you know, Kirk also understands that I hired him to come in here and be comfortable with calling the game the way he's used to calling the game. But I think that's important. We have a Penn State offense, we have a Penn State defense, and we have a Penn State special teams, and we have a plan that's worked and a model that's worked. We're going to tweak it each year, and Kirk's a part of that tweak on offense. But we expect to not only be explosive and productive this year, but take it to a whole nother level with Kirk's leadership.
Well, the opener's less than 10 weeks away against Kent State, and let's hope in 10 weeks, Coach, we're talking about football, right? Because our fingers are crossed how this plays out. We do appreciate the time tonight. Thank you for joining us here on the podcast.
Guys, thank you so much. Appreciate you guys. Have a great night.
Stay safe. That'll do it here on the College Football Podcast. Big thanks to Coach Franklin, it was good to talk about football. And obviously, there are a lot of pressing issues in front of us. But also, Penn State's going to be a lot of fun to watch if we do have a season, especially when you see them locked up with Ohio State and the talent that they have on the defensive side and Penn State's offense. If Clifford can get more comfortable, that backfield is, I mean, eye-poppingly good. Of course, as promised, we will continue to have more coaches coming down the road here, as well as our reporters. And then, you know, want to make sure you guys also, while listening, that as we get closer towards the season, we will start breaking down teams and conferences and the outlook for 2020 as we try to remain optimistic. Big thank you to Taylor Schwenk on the other side, making sure everything runs smoothly here for the podcast from different locations. And enjoy the rest of the week. Stay safe, social distance, and wear a mask if you want football, because, gosh, we want football, right? Thank you.
Geico knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the thrill of the revving engine and pure adrenaline of flying down the highway, to the confidence of knowing that Geico always has your back with 24/7 access to claims service. But Ari Snyder has one reason in particular.
I have extremely large upper arms. They won't even fit into most shirts. Thankfully, biking really embraces vest culture, so I feel accepted.
Geico Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.